Movie Pipe.
Movie Pipe.
Movie Pipe.
Movie Pipe.
Say it.
Say it. Say it.
Movie Pipe.
Movie
Pipe.
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 Movie Pipe.
Movie
Pipe to Pipe Bushman.
We've got to return some videotapes.
Now, a message from our sponsor.
Hello, I am Sam Ashers. I am the co-host of the Arrow Video Podcast. And VHS quit. I can't do this voice for the entire read. Do you know what I mean? It's insane. He asked me to do the voice. I can't do the voice the whole... this. Four paragraphs I've got to read. This thing will take, I mean, my vocal cords will dry up, and I'll resemble a gurgling plug in a sink if I continue to do this voice. So I'm not going to do that voice. I'm just going to do my normal voice. So I'll flip to that in a minute, and I'll pretend I'm Sam. I'm not Sam. This is Gigi, but I'll pretend I'm Sam and I'll do my normal voice so you won't know it's me. You'll think it's Sam, but it's not Sam. And when you actually go to listen to VHS Quest, which is the sponsor of this episode of Movie Pipe, you will actually hear what Sam sounds like. And he doesn't sound anything like my normal voice, which is the next voice you hear is my normal voice, pretending to be Sam Ashurst. Ashurst. Sam Ashurst. Hello, I'm Sam Ashurst. I'm the co-host of the Arrow Video Podcast, and VHS Quest is my mission to build the universe's largest archive of weird, obscure, and insane film recommendations, as well as some potentially very silly takes on modern movies. Join me, my robot co-host Trash Can, and our army of collectors as we find the lost treasures of the sacred tapes, DIY horror, STV cyborgs, DOA action cinema, and much, much more await you, all for just $1 a week. Oh, and you'll get some exclusive merch if you join at one of the higher tiers, so that's exciting too. Brace yourself and get ready to discover your new favorite wild movie. So that was me doing my normal voice, pretending to be Sam Ashurst, reading out the promotion for Sam Ashurst's is VHS Quest, which is a brilliant podcast. And if you want to know what a professional movie podcast sounds like, go and listen to VHS Quest. And it's worth the few bucks a month that you'll pay to get access to some incredible movie recommendations. Movie recommendations that our committee would never dream of going anywhere near. So this is like genius level recommendations. Sam has basically put his brain into the internet and allowed it to sort and filter. It's basically an algorithm. He's a human algorithm for cool movies. So listen to VHS Quest. Just do that, okay? Because that's what I'm being paid $5,000 to do, to read out this promotion for VHS Quest. patreon.com/VHS Quest. I was just telling Paul. Can I just put you on hold a minute? Sorry. Paul, what was I telling you about Bruce Willis's hair, his toupee, his hairpiece in the scene in Striking Distance when he's tussling with the serial killer towards the end? It's kind of the big climactic fight, and he ends up going into the water and he comes out, and there's like a few frames, like a slow motion frame. The fake slow motion frames where he comes out of the water and his hair piece, his wig, is completely vanished, and Bruce Willis is bald as a coot.
What was I telling you about that, Paul? Paul? He's not even there, for fuck's sake. Anyway, this is the thing that was... I was expecting. I was waiting for this to happen through the whole movie. Was... is Bruce Willis's hair going to come off? And I think this is something we need to go back and study in cinematic history. Every Bruce Willis film where he's wearing fake hair, and I'm sure there's a few of them, are there any scenes where there's a noticeable degradation or a lack thereof, toupee, hairpiece, wig, whatever you want to call it? I think this needs to be documented and reported on in the press. Clearly people aren't paying enough attention, but during the climactic fight scene of Striking Distance, the 1993 Bruce Willis cop thriller, his hairpiece, which looks pretty remarkable throughout the film, it literally stays in one place. It doesn't move. So there's either a ton of hairspray on there, or it's just a bizarrely made mold of hair. It's not actually real hair or synthetic hair. It's a mold made to look like hair, painted probably by a visual effects professional or a makeup professional. But yeah, Bruce Willis's hair in Striking Distance, it just doesn't go anywhere until it's not there, and then it becomes even more noticeable in its absence. I'm not sure why they gave Bruce Willis hair in Striking Distance, the 1993 Bruce Willis cop thriller. I know why. Because he comes from a family of cops, and all of his family members, which include the dad from Frasier, so Frasier's dad, and it also includes Tom Sizemore as his cousin and Dennis Farina as his uncle. So it's pretty safe to say there's like an Italian Irish thing going on. They all have an abundance of head hair, and aren't afraid to show it off. And the casting of Willis required him to also have the genetic trait of hair, of which he does not have hair. He hasn't had hair for over 40 years. Look, I'm not dunking on blokes who lose their hair or have thinning hair. It happens to the best of us, but that's why Bruce Willis has fake hair in Striking Distance, and it comes off, and it's quite funny, and they left it in the film, and it's never addressed. And directly after that scene, he exits the river having vanquished the serial killer enemy, and his hair's wet, his wig is wet, and there's just no mention ever again that he didn't have any hair during that scene. So it was clearly a goof. They maybe had only one take, or one take that was usable. Therefore, it's in the movie, and it's worth watching for that split second of Bruce Willis sans wig. Leading up to that, wow, this is like a fun movie, and this has been on the list for years and years and years. The committee decided, the 37-person programming committee decided that Striking Distance was to be the next film that we watched. I watched. I mean, Will, I don't know what apparently he's editing an episode that we recorded about 57 years ago. So one day, dear Pipeheads, that will get published to this feed, and you'll be able to listen to me and Will talk about... beep. I think Paul's going to edit out or put a beep where I said the name of the film, because we don't want to spoil what we're going to be talking about in the next episode, which is beep. I tried to sneak another one in there. I don't know if he's quick enough on the edit beep button, but we'll see, won't we? We'll see if there's a beep sound when I say the name of the movie, which is beep. So anyway, Striking Distance, a lot of fun, a lot of twists and turns, a terrible dialogue, but also amazing dialogue, because it's just like, it's one of those movies that takes itself seriously, and also because of its screenplay is also a bit goofy, but because of that it's very amusing. A couple of standout things though. It starts with Bruce Willis and Fraser's dad in a car, and they're driving towards a policeman's ball or something. So they're dressed in their uniforms, and Bruce Willis's dad, Fraser's dad, is asking him, hey, when are you going to settle down? When are you going to give me those grandkids? Whilst they're driving along, and then they get a call on the radio, and suddenly they're in a hot pursuit of, like, of, it turns out, the serial killer guy. Just like randomly, we're just right next to where he was driving, and now there's a big car chase, and they're at the front of the car chase. And you would think, wouldn't you, they would switch from convivial, like, you know, day-to-day small talk about, when are you going to give me grandkids? Hey, Dad, stop busting my balls about that. I'll settle down at some point. To serious cop talk, like, right, you know, take this next left, call for backup. No. At one point, they're driving into traffic on a fucking freeway, and this car is all over the place, and Fraser's dad is still asking, they're still having this conversation about whether Bruce Willis's character is going to get married and give Fraser's dad grandkids. Like, you're in pursuit of a fucking felon. Like, save the family talk. Like, focus on the job, guys. I don't know what this is trying to communicate. It's like kind of a goofy thing that they sometimes do in movies, where what's happening in the car does not represent the stress levels that are happening outside of the car. And it cuts to, like, the car just swerving and, like, jumping and shit, and, like, it cuts back to them in the car, and it's like they're on a, you know, driving down a country lane or something. Very, very funny. I've no idea, you know, why that's in the screenplay. Anyway, it's amusing, but I know why it's there, actually, dear Pipeheads. It's a story device. It's to quickly create the bond between father and son, because what happens at the end of the first act, the inciting incident for all those who like to study storytelling devices and narrative structure, the inciting incident, isn't it, for Tom Hardy. That's the name of Bruce Willis's character. It's Tom Hardy, yes. Very strange too, but this was made in 1993, and I think Tom Hardy was probably at most in his early teens, likely just coming into puberty. Anyway, his name's Tom Hardy, and he's like, you know, the screenplay is trying to tell us that there's a connection between father and son. Because immediately after this chase, once they catch up with the serial killer guy, they have a big crash in a field. They have to do it in a field. It's out of the way of, you know, it's cheaper, isn't it, from the movie. They just have it. No, like, have them come off the road into the field. We can do whatever we like in the field, because we made a deal with the farmer. He said, yes, you can explode a car over there, but just don't go anywhere near the geese. Please don't touch the geese. Oh, as we know, Bruce Willis, I wouldn't go so far as say a fetish for geese, but he likes a bit of goose, doesn't he? Yeah, especially the ones that are force-fed to enlarge their liver. Have you ever seen those videos where they force-feed a goose? Truly bizarre. It's no way to treat an animal that is later to be killed and eaten. Have their organs removed and turned into a pate and put on a nice bit of French toast. Cheers. Thanks a lot. Anyway, Willis likes geese, but that's not why we're here, is it, Pipeheads? We're here to talk about the movie. They have a big crash. The cars roll over. It turns out Bruce Willis's dad dies, and you're not entirely sure how he gets killed, but there's a suggestion that he's shot, and the suggestion is he's shot by the escaping serial killer, who somehow gets out of his car and runs off. Immediately on the scene are Dennis Farina, who's Fraser Cain's dad's brother in this movie. So Bruce Willis is the character Tom Hardy's uncle, and he's like, Tom, it's your dad, he's gone. And then there's a big, like, I got very emotional, actually, because I lost my father, not in a serial killer pursuit, more traditional way. He was sick and whatnot, but anyway, yeah, it was quite emotional, because that, you know, I got suckered in, even though it was goofy and the script was like clunky as shit. I got suckered into the father-son thing. And when Fraser's dad croaks, Bruce and his beautiful head of fake hair have a little bit of a moment. And I'm like, right, inciting incident. Now the entire rest of the movie is spent with Bruce Willis in pursuit of this serial killer. However, his life is made more difficult because he's been demoted from the police to the river police. And now he's having to inexplicably work on the river for some reason. Again, the more I talk about this, the more it doesn't make any sense, but it works perfectly for this film. It's just like, shit, how do we get him on the river? Because Pittsburgh has a beautiful river. We could, again, it's cheaper for movie production. Yeah, shoot. The mayor's like, streets? No. River? All yours. Go for it. We're like, fuck, we need to set this on the river. Right. Demote him to the river police. Awesome. We get to explore that whole side of the city. And it's kind of cool because not many movies are set almost exclusively on the river of a major American city. Especially one involving Bruce Willis and Sarah, and he inexplicably also lives on a riverboat, which is just, again, it's not deeply written into the script, but look, I'm gonna roll with it. Maybe this is what happens up there. If you know, there's a history of living on the river. Like, there's a scene at the beginning where him and his dad walk past a boat, and I'm like, Chekhov's boat. That boat is definitely gonna feature later on in this movie, and it does. It's actually part of the climactic scene. So there's, like, you know, it's clunky, but you roll with it. It's a B movie, and it's just so much fun. Like, it's so much fun. Like, Willis is grumpy as hell because his dad's dead. He's trying to, like, find this serial killer. The serial killer is, his sort of hypothesis is the serial killer is actually a cop because of the way he drives. And his behaviors. So he spends the rest of the movie kind of, you know, investigating that, and he teams up with Sarah Jessica Parker, who again inexplicably is assigned to the river boat department. They partner up, they end up falling in love, and, like, you know, basically getting their way with each other. And there's this, like, amazing scene where they've just enjoyed each other on the riverboat. And she turns, whilst lying in bed with Tom, she turns to Tom Hardy, Bruce Willis's character in Striking Distance, 1993 cop thriller, and she says, "We shouldn't be doing this. We're partners." Tom Hardy, Bruce Willis, says, "We should be shot." Joe Chrisman, who's Sarah Jessica Parker's character, she goes, "We should shoot each other." And he says, "Too much paperwork." End scene. These are like the little gags you get in this movie, and they're brilliant. And yeah, it's just a lot of fun. I don't want to spoil the end too much because it is just a little bit bananas. Tom Sizemore is brilliant in this. Like, he's bringing the Point Break undercover cop energy to this movie. And again, I understand Mr. Sizemore has struggled, continues to struggle with, you know, his addictions and substance abuse, and I'm not trying to make light of that, but he is bringing a certain energy to this film where you can't help but think, is he under the influence here? He looks like hell, but it totally suits his character. And he pops up early. He's introduced by Dennis Farina. And again, this is sort of like the strange genius of this movie is, through its clunkiness, it's also just excellent. Like, it's kind of almost like a masterclass in how to do a movie like this. And he's introduced by Dennis Farina at a time where Bruce Willis is building his hypothesis about the serial killer being a cop. And I got sucked into this again. Like, I got sucked into the father-son thing. I got sucked into, like, Tom Sizemore is definitely the antagonist of this movie. It's Tom Sizemore. He looks like he's on coke, and he has this, like, strange energy. He's kind of a bit drunk, and, like, just, he's a basically the black sheep of the family. So I'm like, Tom Sizemore is definitely the killer. And he also gets sent away during the movie. Like, his dad sends him to California for some reason. Now, was that written into the script because Tom Sizemore wasn't able to make it to set? I don't know. But anyway, he inexplicably comes back later on. You're like, right. Oh, I know why. He's sent away to California, quote unquote, by his dad, because you think his dad is covering up. So it's a little bit like Copland as well. So yeah, Striking Distance is like Copland meets Dirty Harry meets Zodiac. Like, the don't get your hopes up. It's not a David Fincher movie, but there's these elements in it, and there's like some noir shit going on in there as well. So it's, check it out. I was like super surprised. It was a lot of fun. It's Bruce Willis operating at the height of his powers. I feel like it was a strange one for him to sort of slip into around this time. He's coming off of things like Die Hard and Die Hard 2, and he's an A-lister. He's a megastar in the early 90s, and I just don't think this movie really hit with audiences. It could have been the poster, honestly, and the name Striking Distance. I really just, I'm not sure what the hidden meaning is there, and it's not a great name for this film. I think they could have come up with a better name and a better poster. I remember the poster as a big, it's Bruce Willis's big face, and it's like he's hovering over a boat with a gun, and you're like, okay, like I actually thought maybe he's kind of an assassin or something. I didn't realize he was a cop. Anyway, Striking Distance, not a good name, but actually a surprisingly enjoyable movie, and it has, I'd argue, one of the best, if not the best, car chase scene from the 90s. And this is all pre-CGI, by the way, so this is all in camera, this is all stunt driving, and they're driving through the this must have been where the mayor allowed them to use the streets of Pittsburgh for this one. They're driving, this is the opening scene where him and his father are having this, like, you know, fucking heart to heart over his "Where are my grandkids?" speech. And they're jumping down streets, they're crashing, they're like, it's just an excellent car chase. You know, reminiscent of obviously like a French Connection or a Ronin, where it's all in camera, it's all very believable. But I was, you know, I was like, wow, this is like a really great way to open this movie. And they put the money on the screen. Like, this is some proper stunt work. And I miss that in movies. I miss stunt work. I miss people, lowly paid professionals, risking their lives for the benefit of audiences. And so famous multimillionaire movie stars can just, you know, keep their hair in one place, quite literally, when it comes to Bruce Willis. That was Striking Distance. It was a lot of fun. You've reached the end of the episode. You've reached the end of the episode. You've reached the end of the episode. You bet you thought I wouldn't say it again. I'm going to say it again. You've reached the end of the episode. You've reached the end of the episode. You've reached the end of the... I just literally could sit here and record this for like 2 hours. I'm not going to. But if you're listening to this now, you're one of a handful, literally a handful of people on planet Earth in the history of humankind who's listening to this right now. You've struggled through episode after episode of Movie Pipe, believing that it will get better. And somehow we find ourselves sharing this moment where you're listening to me repeat myself over and over and over and over again, simply to amuse myself, knowing I'm wasting precious moments with friends, family, your job, sleep, anything that's more important than listening to a quite shoddy podcast about movies with no attempt to make it any better. We got a nice microphone. We do some sound effects. We have a theme tune. Yeah, we do all that kind of stuff. But that's, we're absolutely bare minimum effort. And yet you still tune in. I'm not even going to say thanks. I'm actually quite annoyed. Because basically, if I see people listening to this, because I see the analytics, if I see people listening to this, it means I have to keep doing it. We have to keep doing it. Will, yeah. Will and Gigi have to keep doing this. We have to, because there's 11 people who listen to this show. And what do you think will happen to their lives without Movie Pipe? It would be better. Their lives would be, just by an order of magnitude, more productive, better. Just go and do something else. Stop listening. Seriously, stop listening to this fucking podcast. But this episode is over.